Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has supported our nation's heroes and their families ever since. Heroes like Marine Corps Sergeant Adam Mayo. He served our nation for over 7 years before he was severely injured during training. He was left paralyzed from the chest down, severely limiting his ability to move around his home independently. Tunnel to Towers paid Sergeant Mayo's mortgage, removing a financial burden for him and his family. The foundation gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his specific needs. Tunnel to Towers helps severely injured service members and first responders, as well as Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders. It has already come to the aid of so many heroes and their families by providing mortgage-free homes. The foundation is also committed to eradicating veteran homelessness. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Buck Sexton Show. This episode, we have Amber Smith with us. She's phenomenal. Amazing lady. She was a Kiowa helicopter pilot in Afghanistan and Iraq. So combat tours in both war zones. She was also Deputy Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs under the Trump administration. The author of the phenomenal book during about her time as a Kiowa pilot, Danger Close. And Amber, you got to tell everybody, what do they need to know about the Kiowa platform, right? Because people give a lot of hoopla, a lot of attention to the Apache and to the Black Hawk. But tell everybody about what it is to be in a Kiowa and what kind of stuff you were doing.
Well, I was grateful enough to get to fly the most amazing badass helicopter in the Army's inventory at the time. It's a light attack reconnaissance helicopter. It's a two-seater that the co-pilot. We have a 15 gun. We have a rocket pod that carries high explosive rockets. And then we can carry Hellfire missiles as well. But the best part of our job was who we work for. We work for Ground Force. So infantry, Marines, special forces, NATO forces, in-country forces like the Iraqi Army or the Afghan National Army, and we fly extremely low level, just anywhere from 50 to 150 feet off of the ground, so well within range of the enemy's weapon systems, and it's definitely down in the fight every day we go out on a mission.
So, I mean, there's flying close to the ground, you know, like Maverick in the recent Maverick, where he's all, you know, doing the obstacle course thing or whatever. And I spoke to an F-18 pilot who said, you got to understand at that speed, you're in the dirt in like 2 seconds if you mess up. But you were
not
flying
much time for mistakes. Yeah,
right. You were flying at a level where, I mean, you could basically see like someone's, you know, you see the color of someone's hair, right? Or their beard. I mean, 50, 100 feet off the ground.
Oh, yeah.
You're not that high off the ground.
We're very low off the ground. Intent behind that is that we do hunt for IEDs on the road ahead of convoys. And we do, like I said, get into these close combat attacks when often we get called in to an enemy firefight with friendly ground forces. So based off the range of our weapon systems, just by nature, we have to be very close to the ground. And that does mean that it is an intense flight. It's an intense mission because, you know, you do have the hazard of the enemy, of their weapon systems, but then you have all of those other hazards that come with flying so close to the ground. You heard in Iraq, wires used to be such a danger to pilots, and unfortunately resulted in, you know, multiple Kiowa crashes. So it was a pretty dangerous job.
Wait, so like telephone wires, you're saying? Like you would actually have
telephone
to worry
wires.
About telephone
yes.
and comms wires?
Yes. Birds, telephone wires, cell phone towers, trees. Yes.
Wow. That's remarkable. What kind of defensive armor do you have on? I mean, because whenever I've seen photos of the Kiowa, it's an agile platform, but it doesn't look like it's not, you know, when you see like an A-10 Warthog, you're like, that thing looks like you could kick the crap out of it. You guys in the Kiowas, I assume,
yeah,
you really had to avoid enemy fire.
The Kiowa could take a beating. It brought me home many times.
Really?
My aircraft got shot up when I was in Iraq, and I had an AK-47 bullet land about 12 inches behind my spine. Thankfully, there was an armor plate behind the back of our seat and then underneath our seat as well. But we also had an armor panel that had an engine block. But get this, because of weight purposes, so we could carry more ammo, we would actually remove that ammo plate so the engine was less protected.
All right, so Amber, you've seen the military from being a combat-deployed rotary aircraft warrior, if I may say. And you've also been somebody who's dealt with the DOD at the policy, communications, deputy defense secretary level. So I think you're in a particular position to talk a bit about the concerns over a military that is increasingly concerned with DEI, social justice, and wokeness instead of being the most effective combat machinery for the defeat of enemies and defense of America possible. What do you think of that problem, the scale of it, the reality of it?
Well, I think it's incredibly dangerous to our national security, to the health of the fighting force as a whole, especially when we compare it to what our adversaries look like today. We face some very real threats. We inch closer to World War III on a daily basis with this administration and the threats that we're exposed to around the world. And what do we see our military doing? We see policies that are pushed down on the force that have the intent of dividing the force instead of unifying the force. And the military works because everyone is one. After basic training, everybody puts on the exact same uniform, and you put the American flag on your shoulder, and you are a team. You're serving towards one purpose, and you do that by coming together. You don't sit there and focus on everyone's unique individuality, and then talk about how other people may be a part of the problem. And so it's really creating this softer generation of a military that we haven't really seen before. And I think it's incredibly dangerous when we look at the attention and the training hours and the shift of focus away from these priceless training hours to prepare for the mission, to prepare to deter, and then if necessary, fight in some of these conflicts that are now being focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion, extremism training, soldiers being told that domestic terrorism is the biggest threat to military, transgender policies, double standards for physical fitness tests. And the recruiting numbers are showing the damning effects that they're having on the military today. The Army missed their numbers by 15,000 soldiers in 2022. That's 25% below what they were looking to hit. That is absolutely damaging to our nation. It certainly shows the health of the force, and it's struggling right now. And when you start paying attention to some of the policies that are being forced on soldiers that are damaging morale, this is what you get: a woke military that is absolutely dangerous to recruitment, to to morale. And young Americans are saying, no thanks, or for other opportunities.
It's really sad when I hear people that have either gotten out recently or served for many years, and in some cases, friends of mine who did, I mean, more combat deployments than I feel like I can even count when I try to run them all past them. I say, wait, weren't you, how many times were you in Iraq? How many times were you in Afghanistan? And they say not only would they not want to go back in, but that if their own son or daughter was thinking about serving, that they would try to, obviously, it's the, you know, the person's choice, but that they would try to discourage them from joining with the military as it is today. I don't know if you've had that experience. I have many friends, particularly from the heavy combat branches, who say, nope, I wouldn't want my son joining up right now.
I have had so many of the exact same conversations, and it's terrifying for the military, the fighting force as a whole, and our national security. With when you put it in the perspective of what is our military supposed to do and how generous up to serve the country, but for me personally, it's it's really sad to see a military that I served in for over 7.5 years. I did 2 combat deployments, 1 to Iraq, 1 to Afghanistan. And to see a military that is unrecognizable to the one that I served in, where we had a mission, we were focused, we were a team. We didn't nitpick each other about a part based on our differences. There was a standard and you had to meet it. Then guess what? That wasn't the job for you. And you went on and did something else. Now, all of these lowered standards, it's absolutely creating resentment within the ranks, and it's killing morale. And people are saying, maybe I should look elsewhere. Like, what are these sacrifices? Living a life in the military is you're missing birthdays, you're missing kids' graduations. I've talked to soldiers who are like, I'm done watching my children grow up over Zoom, you know, and they're missing all of these life things that you, these life celebrations, that anniversaries, weddings, funerals, like these times that you don't get back. And that sacrifice was always worth it to so many people who, and then they see the fall of Afghanistan. They see the no accountability. They see Secretary of Defense Austin testifying on Capitol Hill last week that he has zero regrets for the way that the withdrawal for Afghanistan happened and how the country collapsed and fell into the hands of Afghanistan. We saw that 13 U.S. service members were killed as a result of a suicide attack while they were guarding HKIA, Kabul International Airport, during the withdrawal. So to hear leaders like that, that creates such a distrust of the commander to subordinate relationship that is absolutely vital to the success of the relationship, to get soldiers to want to fight and win on the battlefield. It's that trust of their leaders, which they have with senior military officials and generals. You've lost the military. We live in extremely dangerous times right now. And those recruitment numbers, like, we'll see the next year coming up what those look like, but it's not going to look any better. Like I said, we had lost 15,000 soldiers to their recruitment goals. The other branches, the only reason they made it was because they were pulling from their delayed entry programs. That means they're setting themselves up this year for an either harder recruitment goal. So it is dangerous, dangerous times. And because there's no accountability, because of this toxic core leadership that refuses to look internally, you keep seeing when a Pentagon is questioned about any of their failures, all they do is look outward and they place blame elsewhere. It's never like, hey, maybe we should take a look at what we are doing that is causing some of these self-inflicted problems. And they won't do it.
Come back in a second here and talk about both Ukraine and also what it was like dealing with the press from the DOD during the Trump years. I bet that was sometimes very illuminating about their real goals and intentions. We'll come back to that in a second. But if you've never tried it before, folks, you got to get the MyPillow 2.0. Mike Lindell's team has done it again. The MyPillow, the thing that started it all, built it all originally. Well, now there's an update. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, but now has a brand new exclusive fabric that is made with temperature regulating thread. You're going to find this MyPillow 2.0 to be the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. If you're constantly tossing and turning at night and flipping your pillow over, looking for a cool spot, those nights are over. The MyPillow 2.0 comes at a great deal right now with a buy one, get one free for a limited time and use my name as the promo code BUCK. MyPillow 2.0, temperature regulating technology and 100% made here in the USA. Plus, it has a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special square, get this buy one, get one free offer on the MyPillow 2.0. Enter promo code BUCK, that's promo code B-U-C-K, for the MyPillow 2.0, promo code B-U-C-K when you go to MyPillow.com. So, Amber, let's start with Ukraine. How do you think Biden and the DOD right now? I mean, he's commander in chief, right? And you've got some interesting people who are, including Chairman of the Joint Chiefs Milley and Lloyd Austin, Secretary of Defense, who are making all kinds of decisions about this. It's one way of putting all this. How do you think they're doing so far? I mean, how does the picture look to you of U.S. support for the war in Ukraine 18 months in or 15 months in?
Well, I think that the United States military-industrial complex, the Pentagon, many political leaders in Washington, D.C. are addicted to war. I think they're addicted to conflict. I think war has become big business, and that's extremely dangerous for our nation. If you look at the withdrawal of Afghanistan, we shifted almost immediately towards a new conflict, a proxy war in Ukraine with Russia, and really a fight that is not within vital U.S. national security interests. This is a regional war between neighbors. The United States has already pumped in more money than it ever did in an annual amount for Afghanistan. So a war that we were fighting on the ground in Afghanistan. And it's just, when is enough enough? And I'm not happy with the status of how things are going with the war in Ukraine. I think that we have some much more vital national interests, some real threats that face our nation, like China, every single day. That threat grows, it increases on a daily basis. And I think that the U.S. is preoccupied with fighting a proxy war in Ukraine with Russia right now.
You know, when I think back to, I was in Afghanistan in 2010 and interfacing with, I was a very, you know, very low man in the hierarchy, but I was interfacing with the people who were, let's just say, calling the shots in country for both the military and the intelligence agencies. And I was always, even at that stage and at that age, shocked at how everybody was repeating everybody else's lines, but everybody kind of knew that it wasn't really true. You know, all the stuff about, oh, we're making all these gains in this area and we're consolidating what we've done in that area. But when you actually talk to people who were there or dealing with it, like when I met with a couple of different ODAs, a couple of different special forces teams, and I asked them, well, what do you guys think is going on? They're like, oh, well, you know, the big military assessment versus what you were getting from door kickers who were living in combat outposts, it always felt like there was a huge disconnect. And I was there in 2010. And I was like, this is just not going to work. But if you told anybody that, or if you talked about that, you were kind of treated like you were disloyal to the American war effort there, or the NATO, as we know, war effort there. Before the Ukraine war, right? This is what NATO existed for somehow. Do you feel like we're heading into the same trap with Ukraine? Not obviously with our own forces deployed, but just with our diplomatic, economic, and materiel support to a war that to me looks like it's going to go on for years. And we're talking about, we better start thinking about our support for Ukraine with a T, not a B, as in a trillion, 2 trillion. Well, you think it's heading that way, or are you have any faith that maybe they'll cut it off before that?
Well, to your point about Afghanistan and people sort of saying that you're disloyal if you sort of have an opposing view to poking to potentially start World War III with a nuclear power. There's nothing more dangerous than a weak army with nuclear power. And that's where we keep pushing this war. And so, yeah, just to your point about speaking out in opposition to, hey, maybe we should be pushing a peace agreement between the two nations instead of pushing more war. It's like the thing that, you know, the Pentagon and certain leaders in Washington, D.C. to do. They throw money at the problem, and we have a lot of old in DC that cannot get the cold out of their head. So you rush up into the conversation and it's nope, you know, we're going to throw absolutely anything and everything at Russia. And it's like they get tunnel vision if you bring up the word Russia. Guess what? Russia is a near peer adversary in a conflict with a regional conflict right now. Who is a bigger threat to us than Russia right now? China. Where geographically is the United States primarily focused on right now? Russia. Okay. The United States military cannot, is not capable of fighting a two-front war right now. So when we're sending all of our ammunition, you know, brigades of our military, into Poland, into Romania, in these other areas around Ukraine, helping train in Ukraine, depleting our own United States ammunition stockpile that we will likely need in the very near future. It's just really not smart decision making. I can't say I'm very surprised, but focusing on Russia when we have such a very near threat with China, which is no longer a near peer. China's a peer adversary. Everybody wants to focus on Russia and Washington, D.C. Everybody wants to throw hundreds of billions of dollars their way. And it's absolutely a disgrace for U.S. leadership, who is tasked with protecting the American people, to put us in harm's way the way that they are today with how they're handling the war with Russia.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
the
podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
You know, Senator Lindsey Graham recently said he's definitely open to the idea of putting U.S. Troops in Taiwan, creating a U.S. military presence on that island. What do you think about that?
Does he want an immediate war with China? Because guess what? That's not going to look like the wars that he was pushing in Iraq and Afghanistan for 20 years. That's going to look like a war to end all wars.
It's going to get very ugly very quickly. That is very true. I'm a little bit surprised always, and this is more of just a general political feeling, that Lindsey Graham is always so, he's always treated by conservatives and conservative media for the most part with some kind of reverence. And this is a guy who I've never seen him refer to a war that other people will fight with any trepidation whatsoever. Like, there's never a sense when Lindsey Graham talks about U.S. troops going somewhere to fight, he's not going anywhere to fight. His children aren't going anywhere to fight. He doesn't actually have any children, but, you know, he's not going anywhere. And you sit there and you say, well, why is he getting reelected so many times by the people of South Carolina? You know, what has to happen here? I mean, I'm surprised that his constant push for more expenditure of men and materiel in conflict isn't a bigger problem for conservatives who are taking more of a here at home approach.
Yeah, because it's just an interview to him, right? It's just another campaign cycle. It's just another rally cry. It's not, like you said, it's not his kids. It's not his money. It's not his time away. He gets to go on these congressionally sponsored trips into a war zone, take the photos, get the you know, special treatment, and say that he's been to a war zone and he gets to see what it's really like. But that's not actually what real war is like. Politicians have got to get back to the stance where war is a last resort. It is a very last resort. People's lives shouldn't be so loosely thrown out to fight these wars. And that sort of policy stance for foreign policy and conflicts and wars that we've seen around the world, that is taking a toll on our military. It's completely damaging the all-volunteer force. I mean, I think it's scary times, speaking of the all-volunteer force and how long that's going to stick around for, which is seriously going to change some things. And if a war with China breaks out, that's exactly what we will be looking at. which nobody wants to talk about, but that's the reality.
Yeah, I just, I mean, I'm down here in Florida, and you know, if you had the Chinese, it was like a Red Dawn situation where I think it was actually North Korea in the remake, right? If they started, you know, setting up landing craft or whatever on the beaches here of South Beach, I'd be like, all right, let's go, you know, mount up, we have to fight. But on the other side of that equation, if someone told me that I, you know, some future child of mine is 18 years old, if my son to be, said, I want to go and help out with the U.S. war effort, assuming we deployed troops. I know we haven't at least officially deployed any troops in Ukraine, but I want to go fight for Ukrainian independence. I'd be like, do not join the military if you want to fight for Ukrainian independence. Like, I don't know what else to say. To me, if that's our fight, it feels like people keep bringing this up, say, well, what if a NATO country's next? We have a treaty with those countries. We have a written promise with those countries that says if X, then Y. We don't have that with Ukraine.
Exactly.
So I don't know why these things keep getting conflated.
Yeah, people seem to be missing that point of absolutely, we have an obligation to NATO. Putin is not invading a NATO country. If that should happen, of course, the United States would protect our NATO ally. That's not what's happening right now. And so that's why I say it's provocative that the United States wants to fight this proxy war with Russia. It's pushing the biggest nuclear power in the world. And it is not in the best interest of the security of our nation, of the safety of our nation. And too many people, it's almost like Ukraine is the next, you see the blue and yellow flags waving and the sunflowers. It's like the new thing that people want to support without accepting what the reality of a war in Ukraine against Russia actually means. Like, yeah. How much farther do you think we're going to go before the United States commits some sort of U.S. ground force? And then guess what? Then we're at war with Russia. Then it's no longer... We no longer get to say, oh, we're supplying equipment. Oh, we're supplying training. Oh, we're supplying medical care. No, we're not. We're at war with Russia.
And the devastating effects of that, if the war were to expand, because Russia would obviously feel that it's an exit. Now it faces a true existential threat. The Russians also view Ukraine as existential to their long-term survival. We don't really get that part of it. This is not a justification of the aggression. It's just the understanding of the Russian perception of the issue, right? So the Russians view
Absolutely.
A Ukraine that is de facto or, you know, close, basically de facto in NATO or actually in NATO, which some people have talked about as something that's completely unacceptable for their long-term strategic interest in the survival of the Russian Federation. Point being, they'll keep fighting this out as long as they have to. I mean, they don't see this as a, you know, we're just going to give up because this is too costly for us. Now, there might be a negotiation that could end this, and that's what I think should be pursued. But there seems to be very little interest in even talking about these days. And I think that from the administration,
exactly.
The people in Washington, it's really disconcerting after 20 years of war where it was very clear to people. You were there. I was there. Very clear that this wasn't going to be the thing that they thought it was going to be. It's like we haven't learned the lesson, but I want to come back and actually ask you about some trans agenda issues here in just a second. But I've got to ask everybody at home, how are your energy levels these days? Because you got to check out Chalk. Chalk is an amazing supplement company that brings your energy levels back to optimum. They spent years looking for the right helpful ingredients and organized them into products, especially made for men and women. You're looking for an answer that's a little more developed than coffee cup number 5 of the day, which is what I've had to do in the past, but not anymore. Check out Chalk's male vitality stack or the female vitality stack. Each one is formulated to help maximize your everyday potential. The website's very simple. Chalk, chok.com. Use my name, Buck, when you make your first purchase on the site. Get 35% off any Chalk subscription for life. That's for life, 35% off. Go to Chalk, chok.com. Use my name, Buck, as your promo code. Subscription can be canceled at any time, but people try this product. They love it. You're not going to want to cancel it. Check out Chalk, chok.com. Okay. I got to ask this before. We want to talk about some fun, happy things too, Amber. I'm going to have you weigh in as you know, I'm newly married. And one thing that we keep talking about is what kind of dog we can get. And I know your team bulldog, which is amazing. So we're going to have to talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Team Bulldogs. We're going to have a Bulldog discussion in a second. And also just want to ask what your plans are here going forward and other things, other projects you're going to be involved in. But, you know, there's so much attention now to trans stuff in sports, the trans community in sports. And you've seen him recently, Megan Rapinoe, for example, of, you know, very left wing, became kind of famous for being a left wing voice in the women's national soccer team. And saying that, like, they don't make enough money, even though they're actually paid disproportionately to what they bring in terms of revenue. But, you know, who cares about things like math? She thinks that trans men should be able to compete against women now in soccer, to which I say, like, I'm a guy who spent way too much time at a desk the last 10 years. I would toss around members of the women's national soccer team on a soccer field still to this day, having played at like a reasonable high school level, like a long time ago. It's crazy. We all know it's crazy. In sports, what is the situation now in the military, though, for how the issue is handled? I mean, because if you're a man who becomes a trans female, are you still are you kept in a male unit in male barracks? Like, how do they handle that? What's policy?
So the policy, the Department of Defense policy for transgenders is that they can serve in their preferred gender. So once they go through the transition process and they then are allowed to put their preferred gender on their military ID card, once they have that ID card, they are allowed to shower in like a man that now says he's a transgender woman. I said that right. Is now allowed to shower in the women's locker room. They're allowed to use the women's bathroom, sleep in women's quarters. They are treated as though they are a woman. That is the policy. And then they have to meet whatever female versus male standards exist.
I got to ask. I'm just processing this. What has to happen for them to even, like, qualify? Do you have to meet with a base psychologist or something, you know, to go, or can you just say, no, I'm a woman now, and therefore the military will treat me as a woman?
There's a process. You have to meet with a doctor, but not every transgender that exists out there or wants to transition has gender dysphoria. Some do, but some don't. And it doesn't matter. Like, regardless of if you have it or not, you're still allowed to transition if you speak with your doctor and then you speak with your commander, and you it takes away considerable amount of time. A soldier who is in that process of transitioning, hormones, surgeries, the time it takes with all of the administration things, you missing training. And then the team grows without you, right? But then you have to be fully accepted back as soon as you come back. So it does not add. If the military had like a litmus test for pretty much everything they do and said, does this policy make us a stronger fighting force? Does this make us more likely to win a war against China? Does this make us a more lethal, you know, more elite fighting force in the world? If the answer is no, maybe they should look twice at forcing those policies on the entire force. But here is the like kicker of equality, right? Which is what the Biden administration is trying to do with this executive order that they pushed down to the Department of Defense when they then allowed transgenders to serve openly. So they fully, you know, are on board with everything transgender. The selective service, what all men 18 to 25 in this country have to sign up for within 30 days of their 18th birthday, Men have to sign up for the selective service. Now, the selective service only says your birth sex. So only men born in their biological sex as a man have to sign up for the draft. So women who transition and become men, they do not have to sign up for the draft. But men who become women are still required to sign up for the draft. So it's like, which one do they see? So are they saying that like transgender women are really men according to the selective service if a draft was ever to happen? Or there's just this like complete double standard there, which happens a lot when some of these policies are shoved down. They don't think in third order effects of the decisions, but it's like, as a society, it's like, when are we going to accept reality? Just like what you were talking about with Ukraine. Afghanistan generals, everybody went and testified up on Capitol Hill, like through the lens of these rose-colored glasses. They painted this pretty picture of what Afghanistan looked like. But in reality, we all knew Afghanistan wasn't going to stand on its 2 feet without the United States military and the U.S. dollar. Ukraine, everybody knows what happens as soon as the United States leaves and quits standing up Ukraine. You can know that Russia is the enemy and wish that this was not happening to Ukraine. But you can also live in the reality of the situation. And it's the same thing with transgenders. The military is focusing so much money, so much time, and training, taking away training to focus and give special treatment to the transgender demographic for the military. And they do so by saying, well, we want to make sure that we are recruiting to 100% of the population. The military has never been able to recruit to 100% of the population. They're at about, you know, less than 25% of young Americans who are eligible to serve today. So it's like, how about we focus on the problems that exist in the military today, on fixing those instead of contributing more problems to the military?
Yes, I think that would make a whole lot of sense. I want to come back. We'll talk with Amber here in a second about just some more general topics. You know, maybe we'll take a little trip down memory lane too. We'll get to that in just a moment. I want to tell everybody about the Tunnels to Towers Foundation. The foundation honors fallen and severely injured heroes and their families with mortgage-free homes. This year alone, hundreds of Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children and our nation's most severely injured veterans and first responders are receiving homes. More than 500 homeless veterans received housing and services last year, and more than 1,500 are receiving housing and services this year. This coming Memorial Day, all the brave men and women lost since 9/11 in the War on Terror are having their names read aloud in a Tunnel to Towers ceremony in our nation's capital. Through the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute, the foundation's educating kids in kindergarten through 12th grade about our nation's darkest day. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Please help America to never forget its greatest heroes. Join me in donating $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, t.org. All right, Amber. So I got to ask, your husband is a fighter pilot. What is he? What is he flying? What was he flying? Is he an F-18 guy?
Oh, he flies the best thing out there, a helicopter. He's not a fighter pilot.
He's a helicopter pilot. Oh, he's also
he's a helicopter pilot. Yeah.
See, I had all these jokes with like, if he did a lane change and almost caused an accident, you're like, oh yeah, just like a fixed wing guy, you know, too fast for everybody. You are married
no
to a rotary aircraft military pilot. I don't know why. I thought he was like an F-18 or an F-22 guy. I'm way off.
Yeah, he is a helicopter pilot like me. He's a cav guy. He's got a Stetson. So, yep.
Oh, wow. Very cool. I was unaware. So I was wondering if there are like any jokes you make, but since you're both rotary, but do you make jokes about fixed wing aircraft people? You know, are you kind of just like, yeah, couldn't make it in rotary aircraft school? Like, I feel like helicopter pilots.
Pretty much.
You
pretty
guys
much,
are a different,
yes.
Right? You guys are like a different bunch because you're flying. I've seen the videos like little birds and stuff and, you know, the Night Stalkers. I mean, they're like practically flying these things upside down beneath the bridge, smoking a cigar, MP5 in one hand. And, you know, they're just going crazy out there doing amazing stuff.
Yeah. When I was in flight school, we would have instructor pilots who, this didn't happen in my cockpit, but students within my class, they would have stories because a lot of the instructor pilots were old Vietnam pilots. So then, you know, after they get out of the military, they're helicopter pilots, they come and they teach like the newer generation of military pilots. And the Vietnam pilots were the absolute best guys in the world. They had the most amazing stories. And yeah, one guy was even like, I didn't know what to do. I got in the helicopter, and like once we got up to altitude, like he just started smoking, and we just were laughing because obviously that's like no longer allowed. But back in Vietnam days, like that's what they did.
Well, that is kind of amazing. Having been, you know, I remember when I was in Iraq and Afghanistan, because you watch some of these movies And like every American Vietnam movie, for example, everyone's walking around shirtless, smoking, drinking beer on base all the time, right? That's when they're back on base, you're smoking cigarettes, you're drinking beer. Not a lot of, I didn't see a lot of beer drinking in theater. They definitely got rid of, the British would do it though. The British were always, you know, able to, which I thought was interesting.
Yes. Yes. They got rid of all of that in today's military. One of my flight instructors though, he was, I actually write about this in my book, Danger Close, when he didn't drink alcohol. He never drank alcohol, but everybody else in his company drank alcohol. And he said he was so sick wherever they were in Vietnam. He was so sick of never getting any mail runs that everybody was too hungover to like work or fly the next day. So he literally like took a helicopter, didn't tell anybody, flew to whatever base has the mail, loaded up the helicopter with all of their mail, and then flew it back to everybody because he was so sick of waiting around.
Well, I'm sure he was a hero to everybody who wanted to get some mail from back home. Very, very good for morale, that's for sure. Speaking of good for morale, I'm going to have you help settle this bet, which is not really a bet, a debate in the Sexton household between Mr. and Mrs. Sexton. And I keep my voice down because when I'm recording this, she might be able to hear me. So I'm like, I don't want anyone to know. I love bulldogs. You and your husband, right? You are English bulldog people. And people give me all this stuff. They say, oh, they have all the health issues and they snore and all that stuff. But I try to tell them I will find the snoring adorable because it's English bulldog snoring. It's not gross human snoring. Help sell right now, because she'll listen to this. I'll tell her about this. Help sell Mrs. Sexton on the English bulldog, which you have as a breed.
So I have been obsessed since I saw one on the gift card when I was probably like 12 years old, and that was my dream. I wanted to get a bulldog ever since then. When my husband got engaged and, you know, we were going to get married, I started sending him photos and videos on a daily basis of bulldog puppies interacting. They're like everywhere on Instagram. So just start tagging her on like every single cute video that you see and get it in her brain, and she's going to come around. She's going to be wrinkly and smushy and how cuddly, and there is nothing like a bulldog personality out there. They're stubborn, but hilarious, and they're the most loyal dogs, the best cuddlers, and they do snore. They're a little stinky every now and then, but I mean, is there a dog that isn't?
I was going to say, who is it? You know what I mean?
It's a bulldog.
We come back, you know, humans, we come back from the gym or whatever. It can be a little rough sometimes. Got to leave the shoes out the back door. Like, you know, it's not, I don't see that as such a big issue. I told you, I'm already doing the bulldog propaganda from Instagram. I'm sending her a little bulldog photos of puppies and things. So we'll see. But she's a big dog person. This is the thing we keep coming. She wants a big dog, like, you know, 80 pounds.
Are you guys looking at a Frenchie or an English?
I want an English. If I'm just going to get one, I'm going to get an English bulldog. So, yeah, that's the plan. So maybe you might have
to
give me...
Well, the good news, a lot of people think that English aren't very athletic. But if you do have a bulldog and you train them when they're young, they're like good walking dogs if you get the right harness. But you got to start them young. And they're also very, like, fast sprinters, and they can jump extremely high. So throwing frisbees, throwing a ball, like, they are outdoor dogs. Like, you can get them out there. It's kind of like up to the owner. If you want them to be like lazy couch dogs and that's all they do from when they're puppies, that's all they do. But like, you want to get them outside and like have them go play at the park, like, they love that too.
Amber, your book, Danger Close, people should get a copy of it if they don't already. I know you're working on another book, which we'll have you back when that is published to talk about, obviously. But anything else, anywhere else people should look for your work, your commentary, all that good stuff?
Yeah, you can always see what I am up to lately on officialambersmith.com. And then you can follow along on Instagram or Twitter at AmberSmithUSA.
Awesome. Amber, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Buck. Great to see you.
Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.